She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And remember, we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And trust me when I say there's going to be a lot of food for thought on this show today. I want to point out that our show today was made possible due to the generous support of the University of Arizona's Green Fund and the School of Anthropology. And I think that's really a great collaboration. I could do a show a day on things going on at the University of Arizona. And just a little bit about the Green Fund. I think it's amazing that the University of Arizona has it. It supports sustainably related projects, proposed by any member of the UA community, and encourages collaborations between students, faculty, and staff, and Mrs. Green's World. I think we should just add that on their website. We thank them for the great work they do, the university in general, on campus and in our community, and for their support of this very important show. The name of our show today was very purposely positioned. It's called Palm Oil versus Rainforest, A Tragedy in the Making. And I am very honored to have three in-studio guests with me today to raise our awareness about palm oil and just what kind of devastating impact the growth of that industry is having on all of us globally. So please join me in welcoming Nicholas Alexandre. How's that, Nick? Good, right? Senior at the University of Arizona, president of the Palm Oil Awareness Initiative, Kim Kelly, PhD candidate in anthropology from the University of Arizona, co-founder and advisor member of the Palm Oil Awareness Initiative. I told you it was going to take me 5 minutes to get through this. And Stacy Teacott, right?
That's right.
Yes, I got it right. Assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Arizona, co-founder and academic advisor of Palm Oil Awareness Initiative. Welcome, you guys. I'm really thrilled that we're finally having this opportunity for you to tell your story. We stayed on it, and thanks for all the work you're doing to bring awareness about this devastating, toxic, awful thing called palm oil and the impact it's having on its environment. So it's going to be fun because we have three of you, and hopefully we'll just pull this off effortlessly, but have fun while we're doing it. Nicholas has been described, and I have to, you know, take my notes here so I can embarrass him a little bit, as the, what did they call you, Nick? It was really great. Okay, wait a minute here. Now, look who's losing her notes. The wizard. That's it. The wizard who can share with us the biological and environmental issues surrounding palm oil. But first, I actually want you to explain to us, like people say to me, well, what's palm oil? Does it come from a palm tree? Is it from a coconut? Tell us what palm oil is and why it is so topical more and more.
So palm oil is a tree that's grown most commonly in Southeast Asia now, but it was originally harvested in Africa. It's called the African oil palm, also known as Elias guineensis. It was originally used as a food for slaves, but until the 1960s, it wasn't shipped into Malaysia and then in Indonesia by the 80s. So
it's like a fruit from a palm tree? Like we have the palm trees and they bloom. Is it the fruit?
Right. So at the top of the palm trees, you get these fruit bunches, and it's these fruit bunches that are harvested and put through mills in order to get two different types of oils mostly, which are the palm fruit oil or the palm kernel oil.
And so does the palm fruit oil taste good?
I wouldn't know. I haven't tried it.
And let's copy that. I hope I never do, now that I know so much about palm oil. So it's two different kinds. And this is so interesting to me. It's like sometimes, like quinoa used to be the most available, affordable food for people that were really in the lower socioeconomic strata. And now it got popular, so they can't even, the people that grow it can't do it. So what type of biological and environmental impacts is the rapid growth of this. Tell us about the growth and why the interest.
Right. So the most recent growth is due, well, at least in the States, is due to the fact that in 2006, the Food and Drug Administration administered a rule saying that you needed to label whether your food had trans fats in it. Naturally, people don't like that very much, and, you know, it's going to have an effect on the amount of consumerism for a product. So rather than using partially hydrogenated soybean oil, which does produce trans fats...
And is really a mouthful to say.
Yeah, partially hydrogenated.
And
yeah,
you did it. You said it perfectly.
So what happens is they start harvesting cheaper oils that don't produce trans fats. Now, soybean comes in second for the most yield per oil plant that we actually use. So coming in second is a soybean, but you can produce about 10 times the yield as much as soybeans in palm oil, especially in, you'll get 10 times the amount of food, and because it's cheap, the U.S. has started to import more and more of it over time.
So it's a cheap filler.
Right. It's also an emulsifier and doesn't oxidize, which means it doesn't go bad.
So you can leave it out on the counter?
You can leave it out on the counter, right.
I'm really curious. I might have to taste it. I don't know. So people cook with it. I mean, we're going to get into that later in the show. But when you talk about the environmental impact, what's going on? And I do know some of the answer in terms of the devastation of old growth rainforests and all of that. What's happening because money's driving the boat now?
Right. So what happens is these large corporations subcontract plantation owners to produce these large monocultures, and it's a monoculture because it's all one species. And so what happens when you do that is that you you fragment the primary forest being forest that's been around for a long time and has been able to accumulate, you know, the biodiversity you see naturally there.
And, you know, my journey started in the rainforest of Mrs. Green because I never saw trees that big in my whole entire life. Like, you don't see them here, especially in Tucson and the Sonoran Desert. But seeing trees of such massive growth, once those trees are cut down, I think it's fair to say they're never coming back. Like, they're never coming back. You can replant a palm tree, but you're not going to replant some of the trees in the rainforest in ever. Like, it's ever. Infinity, almost. Agreed?
Agreed. Yeah, the beauty of an old growth forest is that when you have these trees established, nothing else grows there. So you basically have these large trees that have been around for hundreds of years. And through their placement there for such a long amount of time, they've been able to accumulate, you know, a lot of establishment of other native plants that grow both on the tree, around the tree, in the soil. And that includes also the animals that use these plants for refuge.
And all of the other, it's teeming with stuff that we don't even know about. Like, I'm so fascinated by the rainforest. Like, it's cures for cancer and who knows what else that hasn't even been discovered yet. And we're clear-cutting them. What about in the areas, and if you don't know this, it's fine. I never try to stump the guests, so don't worry about it. But in some places, like in Ecuador and Peru, which I'm much more familiar with, one of the problems with clear-cutting the rainforest and companies coming in is that the natives, the indigenous tribes, they don't have deeds to their land because they just lived on it. It's not a legal system. They lived there from the beginning of time. In Borneo and Indonesia, do you know if that's some of the same situations? Because that's a huge impact.
Yeah, so there's no a very serious problem going on in Indonesia, where Indonesia and Malaysia, where the natives actually don't have the discourse readily needed for any lawmaking process. So there's something called the Customary Land Rights Act, which basically posits that you can keep your land if you can prove you were there prior to 1958. Most of the time, they can't.
Like, how could you prove it?
Yeah.
Pictures? I don't think so. A video? Right? So right. If they can prove it, yeah, which is, to me, a big joke.
And it's estimated that about 80% of land cleared in Indonesia is illegal. So these concessions that the forestry gives to people are basically the minimal perimeter that these plantations use. So they generally go on to protected land as well as native land because the amount of land that's on paper is how much they're going to get taxed, is not going to provide them with the amount of profit they want to get from the timber that they cut down first. In 2002, only 7.5% of the land that was conceded was actually planted on. The rest was just logged and then abandoned.
And then the rain comes. That's what I saw in the rainforest. It sounds so ridiculous. Then the rain comes and all you see is erosion. And right. It's like a graveyard to me. It really is like a graveyard. One question I want to ask you is, you are so passionate about it, and we had a lot of fun talking when you guys got here off air about Nick knows everything. I mean, it's not true, but it's like no pressure, Nick. But what ignited your passion? You are passionate about it. You do know a lot, and you're young and hope for the future. What got you excited of all the things that you could study?
Something that did get me excited was I worked at the Phoenix Zoo as a teenager in high school, and that's where I first learned about the issue. And orangutans are so similar to us, and we don't know anything about them. We know a lot about them, but we don't know everything about them, right?
So, but it's the thing my husband says he doesn't want to ever go to zoos because he can't stand to see any of the primates
right.
behind bars. He goes, it's like looking at one of us locked up. It's terrible.
Right.
So that's what piqued your interest in getting involved in interest about the rainforest?
Right, yeah, that as well as just respect for people in general. You know, we are part of a larger supply chain that we may not be aware of. And that's something where you have to put yourself into other people's shoes. You know, every article of clothing you wear has been through many, many hands, and that relates to food as well. And so, you know, if I want to pick up a bowl of cereal, I also have to realize the pain people had to experience in order to give me this bowl of cereal that I'm thoughtlessly enjoying in the mornings.
And clothing is another one. It's a perfect example. And furniture and all that stuff. It's like, what slave made this possible in my life? And that's really what it comes down to. It really is. So what are you, I mean, I'm jumping all around, but you can hang. What do you want to do? Like, what's your vision? You have all this information. You're a senior. Are you going to go and get your PhD? And you're going to go out in the world and become the, you know, one of the champions? I'm serious, because it's important work.
Right. Well, my future
is bright.
Extends only until September. So for the moment. I don't know what happens after that, but hopefully something biologically and anthropologically related.
That's really great. Now, have you been to any of these areas?
I have not.
And do you hope to go?
I would love to, actually, yes.
You know, I don't know if I could go to Borneo. I really don't know. Like, I took the trip to Peru, to the land forest there, and it was like, it's a weeping, wailing sound that comes from deep inside you that you don't even make any noise when you see what it's doing. What about the people and their displacement? Is that something you can speak to so they clear cut where the people live, eat, make their living, raise their children? What kind of displacement is it causing? Are they hiring these people to cut the trees down and giving them jobs?
Yeah, so there's a long history. Like I said earlier, so palm oil first came to Southeast Asia in the 19th century, but it didn't start becoming big monocultures until the 60s and the 80s. In those cases, there were small families that were basically putting these trees amongst natural wildlife
okay.
in the forest.
Right.
They would harvest it. One of the recent presidents, Suharto, who recently got done with his presidency in 98, he actually mandated that these people that were in urban areas that were poor actually got moved to the edges where productivity is very low. These people are also, native people are exploited, as well as people from outside the country, which are used for migrant labor in Malaysia.
And you know, in the United States, this journey for me has been so illuminating, because we move around. I mean, you know, people say, where are you from? And I say, well, I'm from New Jersey. Well, I moved here 40 years ago, you know, when I lived in Europe and all this stuff. People in Borneo and Indonesia, that's where they grew up. That's where their grandparents grew up, their great parents. They are of the land. So it's not like, oh, I'll go get a job in, you know, New York, right? I mean,
right.
This is what they know. And it's a very somewhat simple and live off the land lifestyle.
Right. And it's something that's very different that we as Americans don't get to experience, because they are still very tied to the land. Whereas us, our old growth forest isn't really around, you know, the remnants of our old growth forest. You know, you could go to Savannah, Georgia and see a couple of the old growth oaks that are left, but you know,
or the redwoods.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But 1% of the earth is covered by Indonesia, but it contains about 10% of the biodiversity. Papua New Guinea is about 0.3% of the land and contains 5% of the biodiversity. So, you know, there's a lot of cultural ties to the land in these areas that we can't really understand, and nor can these large corporations that are owning this land understand.
And I don't want this to sound like a dumb question, but even though it is rainforest, I mean, it doesn't rain all the time, what type of different, conditions does having just palm trees, these palm oil trees or whatever they are, create versus having the old growth forests? Do they need water that has to be artificially supplied or brought in?
It's huge. So recently some papers came out describing how the Amazon rainforest actually dictates the climate in Texas and Mexico. So that might be able to explain how big of an impact the rainforest has on the climate. With regards to man-made differences, the 20% of all greenhouse gases come from deforestation, about 4% just from Indonesia. And so how this happens is basically all this carbon is released from the ground. Now, as we all know, carbon gets released into the atmosphere and acts as an insulator for heat. The sunlight comes into the earth and gets locked in, so we are getting hotter and hotter and hotter. So what happens naturally is in rainforest, you have all this carbon locked up in the soil. So it's dead plant matter that's been accumulating for hundreds and hundreds of years. It can be 18 to 28 meters deep. Now, these plants don't decompose because it's waterlogged, so it becomes locked in there. But in order to produce these monocultured plantations, you first have to drain the carbon peat carbon-rich peat soil, which then now allows carbon to be released through decomposition. Now, it costs about $50 to $150 per hectare of just removing these trees if you're going to do it manually. It's free if you burn it. So what people do is they burn it. It was made illegal in Indonesia in 1997 after a large fire devastated a lot of the land. This produced about 40% of all carbon emissions that were just from greenhouse gases that for that year. Now, generally on these plantations, they'll only drain about 0.95 meters of water, which produces 86 tons of carbon per hectare per year. It's often a lot more than that, too. So just above ground vegetation produces about between 200 and 300 tons of carbon per hectare per year. And that is multiplied between 10 and 30 times in the amount of peat soil that's underneath it.
And so, tell us what a hectare is.
A hectare is about 2.5 acres, which is about the size of a football field, a little bit larger.
I mean, it's what you just described, and I just want to like press pause here and say we're talking about the wizard. I mean, it's like this is
he can do the whole interview.
The stuff, and like I will forget that there's going to be a break because I cannot believe how much you know about it. I mean, it's beyond devastating. And I watched this show the other night on PBS with Richard Attenborough, and I decided when I come back again, I want to be him. Because the places he's gone and the things he's seen, but in his lifespan, he was showing the rainforest and talked about what you just talked about, the trees, which then help cool the whole planet. And when they're gone, everything's starting to heat up. I mean, literally burn up because the shade isn't there, because the reflection is really not helping to cool the water. I mean, it's all connected, so it's pretty devastating.
Right, and these companies could simply just reuse their land. It's a 25-year cycle for a plantation. It takes after the third year of planting, you can start harvesting, and it takes 25 years where you have to replace everything. But just using these plantations, that only releases between 20 and 50 tons of carbon per hectare per year, which is significantly less than draining new land, which goes on to protected tiger habitat as of recently.
So, it's all part of, like I call it, the integration of thought. We're all part of one planet. And it's when I went to the Amazon, that was my awakening. It's like, okay, you live in Tucson. You're breathing air, oxygen, in your inhale from the rainforest.
Right.
Okay, I told you that time would fly. So we're already getting the one-minute warning. And we're going to do our second segment in a minute. And when we come back, we'll have Stacy Teacott, who will share with us some information about the Palm Oil Awareness Initiative Group, which I don't know if it's small, but I know it's mighty, and the plight of the animals, because you just basically touched on it a little bit, and talk about the devastating impact for that. I mean, it's really messing everything up. So please stay here with me for this exciting, upbeat presentation of how the big dogs, we're gonna bring them down. Stay right here with me. You won't want to miss a second.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at mrsgreensworld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at mrsgreensworld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the Igloo radio app. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. We are a proud member of the Dream Vision 7, Glimmer Glass, Green Radio Divas, Blog Talk, and Speak Up Radio Networks. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@mrsgreensworld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody, and thanks for joining us. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And what a show we're having today. So much to think about. And when I'm experiencing this, it's like heavy-duty stuff, but to know better is to do better. And that's like my mantra. You have to like experience the pain of what's really happening so you can be part of the solution. Joining me in studio are three experts on palm oil. The name of our show is Palm Oil versus Rainforest, a true tragedy in the making. And of course, I added a word already. Nicholas, great. Nick, great first segment. I got to tell you, you are a wizard. Senior at the University of Arizona, president of the Palm Oil Awareness Initiative, who does not know his future beyond September, so we'll be rooting for that. Stay tuned. And Kim Kelly, PhD candidate in anthropology, the University of Arizona, co-founder and advisor, member of the Palm Oil Awareness Initiative, and Stacy Teacott, assistant professor of anthropology at the university, co-founder and academic advisor of the Palm Oil Awareness Initiative. And you know, guys, I always repeat all of it because it's really important to me to establish what incredible credibility the three of you have in bringing a quality program to our show. So it's a long intro, but it's really worth it. Okay, Stacy, it's going to be all about you now. You ready?
I'm ready.
Ready. And first of all, we met at a food event at the University of Arizona.
Yes.
That's the great and...
That was our very first event.
That was our... I love that. It's like I am the oldest person there manning a booth, and I love it. I feed off the young energy, and my team loves going. And it's a lot of really great things happening about healthy food and non-GMOs and a bunch of really different things. So tell us about the Palm Oil Initiative, how it got started, and what piqued your interest.
Well, I teach a class called Natural History of Our Closest Relatives, and I'm a primatologist. I study non-human primates. I don't study primates that are actually affected by palm oil, but I have a unit on primate conservation, and I use palm oil as an example of how there's this human-primate conflict and that impacts conservation of these species. And so year after year, I give these lectures, and I get increasingly frustrated with myself and the issue in that I'm not doing more. I'm telling people about it, and I'm changing my shopping habits, but that's pretty much it. I was teaching another class that both Kim and Nick were in, actually, and this issue came up, and Kim was as aggravated as I was.
Which is great. I mean,
Yes. Seriously,
it's like this, are you kidding me right now?
And lit a fire under me, and we decided that we wanted to do something. We didn't really know what, but our first mission, we thought, was labeling all of the foods on campus that contained conflict palm oil. And we thought that this was really a really simple mission, but it's not a very complicated issue. We've worked with, or we've at least met with some people who are excited about this and seem very open to it. It seems like a possibility, but in the distant future. And there's a program at the university called Smart Moves, and they're into labeling foods so that people can make healthier choices. And so we're hoping to be a part of that at some point in the future. But because that's sort of a long-term goal, our general mission is to not scare people or guilt people or alarm people into being better consumers, but to really educate people, because knowledge is power.
Yes.
You can make those better decisions, humanitarian decisions, and sustainable decisions if you know the issue. And so we've dedicated our time and energy. Well, first we grabbed a bunch of undergrads who were interested in this issue too, including Nick, and who have been wonderful. And we became eventually an official student group. And so through being a student group, we could apply for some funds and do some more events and spread the word. And so we've done a lot of events both on campus and off campus in the Tucson community. We've had screenings, and we'd have a lot of tabling events, and we've done some work at the zoo and with the food co-op, and just try to get the word out. And so that's our mission, is to really educate people. And we've also taken that beyond Tucson and the University of Arizona, and that we have built and maintain a website, which is sort of a clearinghouse of information about palm oil, conflict palm oil. If people are interested in learning more, and
it's a good website. It's where I got a lot of my info.
Oh,
is it
good.
The one is what is palm oil?
Yeah.
Weebly.
Yes.
.com.
That's right.
Because I went down the rabbit hole and I clicked on the links, and it's very what I call content rich.
It is. We're trying to pare it down a little bit to make it easier to navigate, which takes a lot of time and effort. But we have a lot of information on there. And we're constantly working on a shopping guide, which is a very difficult task as well. It's hard because there's some items that might not have conflict palm oil in them, but the parent company does have other products that have palm oil.
But I want you to explain to me what conflict palm oil palm oil is versus, is there non-conflict palm oil?
Hypothetically, palm oil can be harvested ethically and sustainably. And it's, like Nick said, it's a very high-yield plant, so it could be this miracle plant that provides a lot of people with the nutrients that they need. But unfortunately, demand is so high that it's unethically sourced in a lot of instances. So as Nick kind of touched on, there is forced labor. Some people are actually lured to other locations under the guise of, getting paid a fair wage, maybe minimum wage, and then they end up, the terms of their contract are changed once they get to these far-off places. Some of them are actually locked up at night.
It's slavery.
It's, slavery.
It is slavery.
And they're using child labor as well. So there are a lot of issues, and this contributes to why it's such a cheap oil, because of these labor issues. It's also unethical because they're, as Nick also mentioned, taking land from people that are not giving permission for their land to be planted.
They can't show their deed because don't have any paper because it never existed.
Yep. That's right. And by removing a source of food and protection in the homes of a lot of species, including critically endangered species and endangered species, these species are left with nowhere, their forest is gone. And so they're ending up in these palm oil plantations, and that's leading to this direct conflict between plantation workers and these animals. So one of the best examples is orangutans, who are sort of this flagship species for the cause. They're ambassadors. People can relate to them. They're so human-like. They're very flashy, and they have a lot of character, and so people can identify with them. And orangutans have been found with hundreds of bullets in their bodies, and they've been chained up, they've been dismembered, they've been burnt. It's pretty brutal. And it's not just orangutans. There are a lot of other species that are affected as well.
So, let's all press pause here and think about what was the impact of that statement. I mean, it's like, I really don't want to cry on my show because people think you're a wimp then, but it's like, it's very devastating. And we talk about the orangutan, it is. It's like just so next to us and one step away. So I'm curious about, there are so many organizations on campus, and I sometimes think I live in this little Mrs. Green's World bubble because the people I hang out with, I'm interviewing and getting to know and reading about and, you know, blogging about and whatever. What's been the response? Are you encouraged by the consciousness of the kids on campus? And it's not bashing if it's good or bad, but are you hopeful about this demographic, this generation of, I don't know what you want to call them, millennials or whatever they are, there's always another name, of really being more aware and caring more? Or are you...
I think so. I think, you know, in my classes, I try to be very open-minded and not, you know, not alarmist and,
right.
and make sure everyone has sort of a calm tone when they talk about these things. They know that there are a lot of people involved in the palm oil industry that are also victims of this larger industry. People aren't necessarily doing these things because they're inherently evil. Everyone is coming at this from, you know, a different background with a different set of needs. So I try to present this in a pretty open way so that it doesn't matter what your personal politics or background is, but you can be open to understanding the issues and that you're complicit in this. You're a consumer. You're purchasing these products, which we actually haven't talked about what products they are, but we are purchasing these products, and they can be traced back to this, you know, child labor and slave labor and causing the demise of critically endangered species and so on.
But when you talk about the products, which mm-hmm. we will, when I started doing research, like, it's in everything.
Yes.
Like palm oil, and it has lots of names, which I think Kim is going to talk about, mm-hmm. many, many pseudonyms.
170, I think, is the last count.
Like, seriously.
Yeah, you can't remember those.
No, you can't. And if you can't pronounce it, I did this TED talk, which I shouldn't even talk about because it wasn't my TEDx talk. But if you can't pronounce the name of what you're eating, you probably shouldn't be eating it.
Yes.
It was one of my, you know, my taglines. It's like, be careful. If it says sugar, you know you're eating sugar. But if there's a 26-syllable word, it's probably something they don't want you to know about.
Yes.
It makes me really upset. And let's go back to something you said earlier. When you said having an impact on campus about food labeling, are you talking about, like, that's a gargantuan, really big deal? You mean like the food vendors?
Yes.
Yeah, so including them, like, you know, I'm not going to pick on anybody, but like Chick-fil-A and all those places that
Well, we talked with Dining Services. Kim okay. can actually talk more about this because she spoke with them in a face-to-face meeting. So we talked with Dining Services about the food that's prepared and sold on campus.
Right.
But also Smart Moves is planning on labeling other foods as well sold on campus.
And they're doing some good things. I mean, they mm-hmm. really are. And they have some healthier places and a green restaurant and sourcing things locally. So it's like it really isn't about bashing, but it's... And it's the market. It's when you say that, it's like the consumer. We, you know, that song, we've got the power. Well, the consumer really does have all the power.
Yeah.
If we just realized how much our purchasing power meant.
It's true. We even met a wonderful company in town called Sungrown Soaps. And they make soaps. They used to use palm oil in their soaps. They were aware of the issues. And so they're looking...
Sungrown soaps.
Okay. And you can buy them online too, so you don't have to be local. And they have since changed their recipe. They no longer use palm oil in their soaps.
So palm oil's in soap?
Palm oil's in
shampoo,
soap, toothpaste, all detergents, makeup, dog food, fast food,
candy,
baked foods. Oh my God, I'm a candy enthusiast, and it's very hard to find candy that I can actually eat.
But there are some?
There are some.
That's a guilty pleasure, too. We found these vegan, non-GMO, everything gluten-free, good chips. Like, and they're not carob. They're chocolate chips at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And they're teeny tiny. And I think they're good. I don't know. After the show, we're going to go look at the package.
Yeah, it's a good point because a lot of vegan foods actually do have conflict or untraceable palm oil in them.
So does it almost have no taste? Because when you think about all the things you're talking about that it's in, it can't be like a heavy-duty flavor like coconut.
Right, coconut, right.
I can tell when coconut's in anything.
Yeah. I honestly don't know how it tastes either, but I think about, you know, it's used in donuts a lot of the time or in foods that have solid creams So that's solid cream, but you know they're adding flavor to that too. So I don't know.
Everything that just sounds so good. Go ahead. Nick, I know. You want to jump in here.
So you mentioned coconut has a distinctive flavor, and that just brings to mind that most often when coconut oil is used, it's processed to the point where you can't actually taste any coconut. So what that indicates to me is most likely during the processing process, the flavor that would be present in the fruit would be mostly removed,
like beaten out.
Right.
And then added.
Yeah.
That's right.
Colored, yeah.
Yeah, fake. I know. Yeah. I say to people, if you're using a shampoo that's a really beautiful turquoise color, you're in trouble because that does not occur in nature. There's no plant that's that color to put that in your shampoo.
But in Madagascar, there is.
There is?
Yes.
Okay. I love knowing that. So put that on the list. I would love to go there.
Kim likes to say, that's where I work. But Kim likes to say that if it foams, then don't use it.
And so bubbles.
Yeah.
When I found out that No More Tears, Johnson & Johnson baby shampoo is like toxic dump on your head, and I use it as a mother, it's bad.
Yeah.
And I don't care calling them out. It's all chemicals used to make fake bubbles and cause no more tears because the chemicals are encapsulated with something that's a total carcinogen. So that's good news.
And we have recipes on our website too where people can make their own shampoos and some other products too. So it's cheaper, unfortunately. No.
Certified chocoholic. Oh my God. And it's so funny.
We'll work on that.
When you become aware like this, and I have a face that goes out there. It's like I'm the face of Mrs. Green. And if I do something bad, I am scared. I do once in a while. Like my secret drive-thru every 6 months to In-N-Out Burger. Everybody has a guilty pleasure. I just talk about mine. And it's like you don't want to do it. And I eat the stuff and I say, I'm eating garbage that was made by slaves, but it tastes so good. Oh, it's like, how's that for self-talk?
Don't eat orangutan tears.
Oh, no. That's really bad. Don't eat orangutan tears. Did everybody hear that? Oh my gosh.
It's hard
I'm
because
choke now. I'm sure they're in peanut oil. I mean, palm oils in paydays.
Paydays? I don't know.
I don't know.
Look into that one. It's hard because you inadvertently ingest it or, you know, consume it in some way all the time. You know, even when you're hyper aware, like we are, we use apps when we shop and we know a lot of the pseudonyms. There are certain things you just don't even think to check. And then you get home and you think, oh, man. But one way to deal with that is, I think it can be very overwhelming because it's in all kinds of products, including milk substitutes and candy and, you know, you can go on and on and on.
And dog food.
You mentioned the
whole spectrum of shampoo, laundry soap.
Yeah.
What does it do for laundry soap? Like, seriously, is it a cleansing agent or a cheap filler?
Okay. Yeah. And so what I found most useful is if you came into my house, I'm sure there would be some products with palm oil. But what I've done over the years is as I run out of a certain product and I decide I'm going to find out how to replace this product with something that does not contain conflict palm oil. But as we've discussed, these things change over time, so you have to constantly keep up with it. But so, for example, I found a rice milk that does not have palm oil in it, the unflavored, unfortified rice milks. But now I just learned that the company that makes my rice milk was just kicked out of the round table for sustainable palm oil because they didn't report, they didn't submit their annual report for 3 years in a row. And so nobody knows what this company is actually doing on the ground.
But, it does make it harder in the beginning. But to me, then you get new habits.
Yes.
And you really feel like it. Like, if I do have the guilty pleasure attack, I have to, like, scrub the inside of my mouth. Because it's like, this is really not good. I want to ask, we have 2 minutes before the break. Time flies.
I told
you guys it was going to happen. About, like, I'm a big fan of the Environmental Working Group. Because they don't take any government funding, any money from any industry, absolutely clean. I mean, they are supported by donors. They have an app for Safe Cosmetics. They just did 80,000 foods that they did. So you have to tell me what your thought is. Is this something they should take on or that they're not taking on?
For palm oil.
Yeah.
Yes, there are actually several apps out there that are helpful in helping consumers. And so we do need help. And our group has tried to develop a shopping guide. And as I said, that was really difficult, but it exists. But there are other groups that have developed apps for the phone. So there's a palm oil guide and scanner. There are...
That's the easiest thing ever, then.
It is. It is.
Seriously. A palm oil guidance scanner. So yep. We have to really... People will hashtag that or something.
Yeah. And if you just look in the app store for Androids and iOS, there's there are about 3 or 4 different apps that people can use. And they're really informative in different ways. They're actually not overlapping too much in the information that they have. So
it's
all very
one
helpful.
Of the most wonderful things about technology. Yes. I'm serious. And it eliminates paper. Because I'm not kidding. Like my seafood watch, there's an app for that. I don't eat seafood. I'm allergic to fish. But if you want to know, you can just go anywhere you are and there's an app for that. Okay, everybody, please stay here with me. Time flies when you're having fun and learning. Kim Kelly will talk with us about issues around certifications, labeling, and the 100. I'm going to see if you can name all the pseudonyms for palm oil. Just kidding. Please stay here with me. You won't want to miss a second.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With 5 ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And hopefully all of you are enjoying this as much as I am, because it's getting us to think about things that not only affect the air we breathe, the planet, the orangutans, the tigers, the rhinoceroses, I mean, you name it, but our health, the water systems. I mean, it's such an integrated thought from this one thing, palm oil, and the ripple effect. It's like one big bad domino if we don't stop it. You know, I can just see them going around. So everybody, there's my little going off on a tangent, which is not unlike me. Joining me today in studio are 3 experts on palm oil, Nicholas Alexandre. Nicholas, say how your name is supposed to be. Nick, come on.
Nicholas Alexandre.
Yeah, see? Never going to try that one. I'm so glad you did it, though. Senior at the University of Arizona, president of Palm Oil Awareness Initiative, Kim Kelly, PhD candidate in anthropology. Am I going to have to call you Dr. Kelly after that?
Later, yeah. Maybe. In September, maybe.
Oh, my gosh. I just have MD after my name for Murphy Darling. Kim Kelly, PhD candidate in anthropology at the University of Arizona, co-founder and advisor member of Palm Oil Awareness Initiative. And Stacey Teacott, which sounds like teacup. It's so cute if you remember that. I love it. Assistant professor of anthropology at the University of Arizona, co-founder and an academic advisor of Palm Oil Awareness Initiative. And, you know, you guys, I want to comment on, we're getting thousands of listeners now because of the quality of our guests and the information that you share. So thanks for staying on this, for making me aware of it. And then I'm part of the tribe. I am aware of it. I talk to people about it. It was my breakfast conversation. It was my lunch conversation. And that's how the awareness spreads. And to our listeners, they care. They download apps. You know, they're making changes. So, Kim, expert on certification, what is that? What does that even mean? Are they you can certify products that are non-conflict palm oil? I love that. I learned a new phrase.
Yeah, so that's one of the things they're trying to do. I mean, it's just like with products that haven't been tested on animals, the little leaping bunny. And actually, there have been some groups that have tried to do something like that, like, you know, have an orangutan on top, on the, have proposed that actually.
Like to have it on the package?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And I always say orangutan, and it's not, it's orangutan.
Orangutan,
so I apologize. But yeah, and that's actually one of the things they've tried to do mostly in Southeast Asia. There are some groups that are working around this, but one of the ones that took traction early and has had the most sort of, I would say, movement in this area is the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil. And then there's another group that has been working on this, the and I'm going to mess up their name, but it's the Palm Oil Innovation Group, POIG. And that's a group of like Greenpeace, the World Wildlife Fund, Rainforest Action Network, that are really sort of now working with the Roundtable for Sustainable Palm Oil, so RSPO. They're working with them to actually give them a little bit more teeth, to give them some sort of, you know, oomph behind them to get it going. Because even though the RSPO has made some inroads into getting things certified, there's still some issues with them. For example, with the RSPO, in terms of getting palm oil, you know, sort of certified, there's four different types of certification. And the most important one, I would say, is identity preserved palm oil. But the problem with identity preserved is that it's so few companies can actually do that, because it's it essentially is that you can trace the palm oil from source to, you know, your
consumption.
Cookie. Exactly. And it's very, very difficult to do that because, as Nick mentioned, this is a highly processed oil. And so anytime you have something like that where you're taking, you know, a product from a plant and then boiling it, you know, getting it out of the plant, the person is taking it to the facility where they can then boil it down, then it gets boiled down into an oil, and then you transport it, and then you, you know, get it into a company's manufacturer, you sell it to a manufacturer, and then they put it in their multitude of products. Well, you know, these manufacturers are not buying, you know, a gallon of this oil. They're buying hundreds of
tankers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so these small family-run farms and these small groups that are trying to do the sustainable palm oil, they can't really grow it in that high of a yield. And so essentially what they're doing then is having to sell it along with non-sustainable palm oil or an uncertified palm oil. So,
get it to market.
Exactly, yeah. And so the RSPO actually has put together a thing called green palms, or green Yeah, certificates. And so that's the whole idea behind that, is trying to get companies to be able to buy that those certificates when they're doing this. And then they can go and say, well, you know, we're actually buying into this certified palm oil, but there's some issues behind that. And again, it's the traceability of all of this. And so it allows some companies to maybe buy these certificates that and say that they're using certified palm oil when they're not necessarily using all certified palm oil. Another problem with them is that a lot of these things are then, a certain percentage of these certificates are supposed to go then back into the environment. And so the companies themselves are supposed to be then combating some of the issues that have been raised and talked about in the show around palm oil. So like some of the slavery and the, you know, harming of the endangered species that live in these places. But there's no sort of oversight of what's happening, you know, with these groups and this money going back. And so some of these problems that have been identified with the RSPO, then now the POIG has actually sort of said, okay, you actually are the group that has the most traction. We're not trying to start a new certification, because everybody has kind of heard about RSPO. It's actually, when we talk to consumers here in the States, people say, well, I've heard about the RSPO, isn't it? If I buy something like that, it's okay, right? And so I think that's a piece of this, is consumers educating themselves, but then also these groups saying, this one has the most notoriety, so let's work with them to actually give them sort of what they need to actually make this happen. And in the past year or two, I'd say maybe 3 years, there's been a lot of movement in this area where some of these groups have put a lot of pressure on the RSPO, and you've actually seen them putting pressure on other companies. And so some of these companies like Kellogg's and some of these other organizations have really taken steps to sort of, you know, get themselves to really do the right thing in this, you know, make commitments to be conflict palm oil free by 2015 or 2020. And this is incredibly important. And this is because consumers have said, this is important to me. This is something, they're writing letters, they're, you know, trying to actually make people do the right thing. So,
and don't, this is what I've said this on the show so many times, don't ever think we don't have the power.
Yeah.
We just have to use it. Things like moveon.org.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have signed more petitions in the past 7 years than I did in the first 60, okay? But it's making a difference.
Yeah.
If somebody can collect 60,000 signatures in 2 days, somebody like General Mills will start looking, and they're they'll start saying, "Oh, that's a, you know, not a big significant number, but it could grow."
Right.
So it's, is there any shining example? Is our government stepping up in any significant way? I don't want to be down on the government all the time, but that's going to be my next book. It's like, while we were sleeping, what the government didn't take care of for me. Not making it political either, but where's the FDA? Like, where's the Department of Agriculture? Where's anybody?
Right. It's a problem. And I'm just going to say it straight up. The European Union has actually taken steps in this regard.
They're always ahead of us.
They're always
Every
ahead of us.
Every show I ever have a guest on, they say Europe, cosmetics, safer, everything.
Yep.
GMOs, labeled. Yeah.
It is. And they actually have a new law where you have to label things in the EU, and you can't just say,
imagine
this is
that.
Oil. Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine
it's amazing.
Having the right to know what you're eating.
It's,
I love
so
that.
And so they have it. And so if they say oil, you know, this product contains oil, it can't do that. That's a no, no. That's like, no, you have to say, is it sunflower oil? Is it canola oil? What kind of oil is it? Is it palm oil? In the United States, that's a huge part of the problem. You can still label an Oreo cookie palm oil, or, you know, oil. Well, vegetable oil.
And I used to love them.
I know.
They are so not on my list anymore because they don't even taste right.
I know.
I used to love Oreos, but I know it's like, what did you say, Nick? Partially hydrogenated soybean oil. I'm like, what the heck is that? I know it's not good for me if I'm eating that, but Oreos, they had to go.
Exactly. But, and it's true. And so in the United States, we need that step to be taken. We need the government to sort of step in. And I know somebody's going to say, oh, there goes another liberal with her, you know, step in with the government. But really, it's true. I mean, we need somebody to, we need the government to say, to take a stand on this issue, because it is so difficult for consumers to actually be aware of all of these pseudonyms, to be aware of all of the issues, that if there was one thing that they could do, that you had to say, this is palm oil and not some sodium lauryl sulfate or, you know, some other derivative name. If it actually said, this is palm oil, people could actually then say, you know what? I made a commitment not to buy that. I'm not going to do that.
So I challenge people who have that thought, of government interference. Why don't I have a right as a citizen to know what is in my food?
Yeah.
That's the other side of it to me. It's like the government should be telling me what I'm eating because they're keeping enough other secrets. And I don't want to be down either. But there are so many absolute examples of plastic bags is a perfect example. There is not one community in the United States that voluntarily banned the use of plastic. It has to be a policy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, our infinite wisdom legislature saying you can't ban plastic bags. That's where we're at.
Somebody once put it to me this way, you know, and when the whole BPA thing became an issue, you know, 10 years ago or so. And I was like, you know, why haven't we done this in the States? And I had a friend from Canada at the time, and she just very quickly pointed out, you know, if your government paid for healthcare, you wouldn't have that problem. Because they're the ones who are paying for the cancer.
And they're making us,
you know,
sick.
Yeah.
Why can't I get my massages paid for? So we're really off on a tangent. Like, we digress. I'm like, seriously.
Welcome to my world.
It's really welcome to my world. See, I've met my whirling dervish soulmate. Okay, now back on palm oil. Just give us the names of some of, I wish there was a camera. That's what I always wish. When we're having this much fun, I so want to have it on, it would be a YouTube viral. So tell me about, can you name like maybe, I don't want you to name all 120-something, but what are some of the most common pseudonyms that, like, just give me five that people could look for and remember?
Well, sodium lauryl sulfate.
I have seen that so much. Like, what the heck is that?
Exactly. And anything lauryl sulfate, any of those.
If it says sulfate, bad.
Yeah. Vitamin A palmitate. So, yeah. Classy, right? I mean,
oh my gosh, you'd think, oh my gosh, I'm getting vitamin A.
Yep.
Palmitate.
Anything palmitate. Yeah. Again, vegetable oil is a common pseudonym that they're able to get around saying, not all the time, like it could be something else, but a lot of the times it is.
Well, but those are three good ones
yeah.
that you see.
Yeah.
And I see that sodium lauryl sulfate thing that you look. Is there, and I'm going to go back to my TEDx talk, because one of the things that I did really like about my that talk was, I say to people, what we have had to do in our life as evolutionary creatures is make a date with your grocery store. Mm-hmm. It's not like you have to constantly learn it forever. You can really consciously learn about some things that are good, that are certified, that are healthy to eat. And like you said, you have to do a check-in again because they might have gotten bought by Estee Lauder. It was like, yeah. I think they're buying everything. But there are things that you can do to change those behaviors and eat healthier. Mm-hmm. One of the things we haven't talked about, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, does it have a harmful effect on your body? Does it clog your pores? Does it cause cholesterol to build up? Or what do you know the answer to that, Nick? Our wizard is shaking his head.
Yeah, so there's two ends of a spectrum for oils. So you don't want to get too saturated just because it might... and too much saturated fat isn't good for you in the same regards as too much meat isn't good for you. You know, there's not cholesterol in palm oil, but it's also not a superfood. On the other end of the scale, you don't want too many unsaturated fats like canola oil or soybean oil because what these have is a high omega-6 to omega-3 ratio that's much, much more out of whack than we normally need in our body. So it actually disrupts this metabolic chain between omega-6 and omega-3s to the point where you actually have cardiac inflammation, which will create a higher propensity to retain cholesterol. So LDL cholesterol, which is the bad kind. So really, olive oil is your best bet with regards to the in quote healthiness of an oil.
And you know, do you know who John McDougall is?
Nope.
He is awesome. Like he really is, but there's no negotiation. He is no oils, no fats, olive oil, bad. I mean, he is the ultimate vegan. And I love having him on the show. It's like, I don't live his life, but he makes it very clear about you don't need oil. You really don't need oil. And I'm like, you have to have a little bit of olive oil on the bottom of the pan to make some things edible. Okay, Kelly, we got to go back to you. Okay, there, I lost my name, my thing. So what, I want to say, like, what lies beneath? And by that, I mean underneath your passion. What is it that keeps you positive about it? I always want to ask people, because sometimes this is daunting to me. Mm. And week after week, I'm interviewing people, and there are times when I just want to go to bed, pull the covers up over my head, and wait for the planet to blow up. I get over it.
Yeah.
But what keeps you filled with hope and passionate and going on in leadership to raise awareness?
You know, I feel that way. This, you know,
sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
The dark side.
Exactly, the dark side. I think for me, it's really, and it may be different for each one of us on this panel, but for me, it's the animals. I mean, it really is. I mean, as an anthropologist, I'm sure I'll be slayed for saying that. But, you know, when you look at the fact that
we will not be slayed for saying that.
Okay. True. But you know, when you look at the fact that my grandchildren, if I ever have any grandchildren, may not ever know an orangutan outside of the zoo,
right?
Or a Sumatran rhino or a tiger, to me, that's a non-negotiable. And that's really what keeps me going is we created this problem. And I really believe, you know, we can put a man on the moon. We can reverse this problem. And that's really kind of how I think about it.
We can tech somebody in China.
Mm-hmm.
I can Skype somebody in the four corners of the earth, and there's got to be hope.
And, you know, the other thing is I was reading an article the other day, and I used to think, you know, you bring up China, and I used to think that maybe they're in the future, China's this huge, you know, economy, and maybe the Chinese don't care because they just want to keep their economy going. But there was an article recently that talked about how much Chinese consumers are starting to think about the environment, even more so than those in the United States, because they look outside their window in Beijing and they can see that pollution.
OMG, seriously. Yeah. I mean,
if
you have to wear a mask to go to work.
Right.
And you don't want to put a mask on your 9-month-old baby.
Yeah.
I mean, you see the pictures of that when the really bad air is out there. It's unbelievable. So we have about a minute left. What do you want to say is the call to action for our listeners? Read labels, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. Visit your website. What is palmoil.weebly.com? Mm-hmm. How can they help you?
Go to our Facebook page, Palm Oil Awareness Initiative, at the University of Arizona. We post on there pretty regularly, and we have a lot of good information on there. Yeah, and just get involved.
And get this show out there. Mm-hmm. Get this show out there. We'll have a lot of people. I got the 30-second warning, and I want to just say next week, Stephanie Dory's talking to us about pronghorns, the Sonorans versus the American pronghorn. Great show from the University of the Environment. And Rachel Lincoln Sarnoff, Mommy Greenus, as part of our Earth Month series, Preserving the Planet is a Family Affair. You guys rock, and thank you so much from the bottom of my very green heart.
Thank you.
Thank you.